Welcome to In It to Win It. This is Steve Barton, and today I am here with Bob Frazier. He's the CFO of Aspen Funds, a real estate investment firm, an economist, macro economist. Bob, you've got decades of experience in finance and investing, and thank you for coming on the show.
And the scars to prove it. It's good to be here.
Yeah, I can tell watching from your videos that you really enjoy studying macroeconomics and then trying to predict what's going to happen in the future so you know where to deploy your capital. Yeah. Is that accurate?
I'm passionate about it. And, you know, I think it happens, you know, when you've gone through three cycles like I have and lost everything a couple times, you kind of get allergic to it. And you know, and I'm kind of allergic to the, you know, it's only going to go up, and I'm allergic to the doomsday stuff too. It's like, okay, you know, everything is an opportunity, but you just have to be prepared. And so I'm passionate about understanding, you know, the tides, right? So I actually had a dot-com business. I'm a tech guy and started a dot-com in the 1990s, you know, so the 1990s, if you started a dot-com, you did well, right? It didn't matter if you had a crappy dot-com, it still did well. Yeah. In 2001, if you had an unbelievably good dot-com, it didn't matter. It was a dumpster fire, as you say, you know? And so the point is, you got to know what time it is. And so I've, since that time, I've been passionate about understanding economics and understanding what is going on. How do I get the wind at my back rather than a headwind?
Yeah. Yeah, it and you like teaching it as well. You've got the podcast with your son, Invest Like a Billionaire, and I can tell you enjoy kind of taking what you've learned over the decades and trying to disseminate it.
Yeah, you know, if it can help people, I'm definitely want to do it, you know.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I'm in exactly the same boat. Okay, what is your current assessment of the global economy?
Okay, well, I mean, basically we've entered into a new era. So I cut my teeth as a kind of Austrian economist and which is hard money economics. And I kind of, revisited that and rethought all that back in the 2009 crisis when, you know, the Fed monetized $3.7 trillion in debt and I was expecting hyperinflation. It didn't happen. And so since then, we've been in a very easy money policy. And in the past, easy money meant, you know, tax breaks and it meant low interest rates. But then since then, that meant, well, let's not only do that, but let's also monetize the debt by actually having the Fed purchasing debt. And now we've upped that even further by let's try Ben Bernanke's idea of helicoptering money. So we do direct payments to individuals. So easy money has gone from a very simple definition of keeping interest rates artificially low to, well, let's purchase assets, number two, and then three, let's actually send money to human beings. Okay. The last two things have never been done before since 2009. Okay. And you know what? The sky hasn't fallen. Okay. So guess what? You know, if people have figured out that let's meet every crisis with easy money and let's manage interest rates by buying things to keep the prices elevated and interest rates down. And it hasn't caused a crisis. So that's inevitably going to produce inflation, and now it has. Now, you know, but inflation, people are more worried about inflation than they should be. At the same time, you need to pay attention to inflation, but they're more worried than they should be. And because we have systemic forces at work that are deflationary, for example, right, the automation. It's reducing wages. For example, high tech is increasing productivity. For example, biotech is increasing productivity in fields and in food. For example, technology is increasing production in oil fields and other things. So we've got these deflationary forces. They're very strong. Globalization is also deflationary, where you know, a guy making $2 an hour in Mexico is competing with a guy making 20 bucks an hour in America. Well, that's deflationary on wages in America. So all these things, we have these deflationary kind of systemic forces. Meanwhile, this extreme demand, created by all this cash in COVID, creating extreme demand and inflation. So what's happened is lately with COVID, so that's the background, right? It's easy money, et cetera. What happened with COVID is we had the supply chain crisis. Meanwhile, we've had the government basically helicopter money to individuals. And you know, I have in one of my the latest economic report, I show a chart of the household net worth per capita, household net worth. And it's hockey sticked. The net worth has just gone hockey stick. It's up 20%. The household net worth is up 20% just since January of 2020. Oh. And if you look at net income per capita, it's also hockey sticked. It's up 15% since 2020. You look at debt service, is down at 40-year lows, 4-decade lows. Because of one, lower interest rates, two, and two, because they use COVID to pay down debt. And so debt service as a percentage of disposable income is at a literally 40-year low. So you've got this literally consumer that is flush with cash, okay, and is super healthy. And what do? Well, now they're wanting to travel, they're buying the stuff, they're going to restaurants. It's creating this surge in demand meeting a constrained supply. So that's what's happened. And the inflation is almost entirely America. So because the other countries didn't have this easy money policy, there's this direct payments to individuals policy, let's put it that way. It didn't affect them. So Europe is having about half our level of inflation, and Asia is having even half of that. Now add in, of course, the oil, when oil spikes, it is inflationary. So it drives throughout the economy. So we're going to see more inflation happening. So if there was no Ukraine crisis, I think we'd see inflation stay high, but moderate from here. But with oil, it's all bets are off. So we're going to continue to see high inflation.
Yeah. Okay. Do you see any, short, medium, long-term risks of the U.S. dollar losing its status as the reserve currency?
No, not at all. The people that are saying that are people who are selling you some kind of asset protection, or they're people who are invested in China. Okay.
So, yuan.
So if you look in 40 years. In 40 years, which is the massive, the biggest massive money printing enterprise ever engaged in U.S. history, right? Over the last 40 years, the dollar has gained 20% of value against other currencies.
Compared to other currencies.
So
yeah. Inflating away, but
exactly, it's a beauty contest. It's like, okay, so you hate the dollar. Well, what are you going to love then? What are you going to, are you, Steve, going to sell all your dollars and go buy, go talk to the Politburo and the Chinese Communist Party and go put your money in the Chinese bank and buy Chinese yuans? Are you going to do that with your millions of dollars? Hell no. Yeah. Hell no, you're not doing that, right? Are you going to buy the euro? I mean, who believes in the euro? The euro is actually more of a hard money currency than the dollar is, because the European Union can offer debt, but literally the countries, individual countries, they're borrowing in a currency that it cannot print. They do not have the right to print a currency unilaterally. The individual nations, the EU as a whole does, but they have to agree, together. And so it's actually a harder currency, but Europe has so many systemic problems. The North versus South has so many economic imbalances. It's hard to really invest in Europe as a growth region. Okay. So what currency are you going to buy? Japan? It's got the gray tsunami hitting, yeah. And I don't know if, you look like a young guy here, but, I remember in the 1980s, everybody thought Japan was going to take over the entire economy of the planet. I don't know if you remember this,
Yeah, I was born in 79.
Wait a minute. No, that's not, No, it literally, that was, everyone was afraid we're going to all speak Japanese and the dollar was going to crash. And what happened is Japan grayed. Well, China is 10 years behind Japan. China has a gray tsunami that is just about to hit. Their working age population has been declining now for 10 years. Did you know that? The working age population, the 18 to 64 age group is declining. And because of their base, their one child policy, and
yeah, now that's
their massive abortion rate, 325 million abortions. I mean, so they've basically, so GDP is, so if you formed your own nation, Steve Barton, you know, nation, the GDP would be very low. Okay. Because it's got just you in it. Now, if you and I went together and formed our nation, well, I just doubled the GDP, okay? So GDP is related to population. It's related to productive population. So if you're declining your population, your GDP is going down. So you know, China is not the future. And anyone who says it is, you know, I just think they're going to be proved wrong, just like the people who said Japan was going to be the future in the 1980s. I think, you know, America is the number one investment destination on the planet. If you look at the innovation, it's interesting that America was where the main innovations in the biotech innovations are happening, is where the tech innovations are happening. And there's a culture of innovation, a culture of, you know, best universities in the world. Our real estate has more value than any other nation. If you look at, the yields on real estate, you know, the price versus what it earns. You look at our companies, you look at Apple Computer, you look at Google, there's some of the most valuable companies in the world for good reason. So it's a top investment destination. We have all the financial plumbing, that allows, stocks are freely traded. We have a rule of law, right? And, 200 years of history of rule of law. You know, we know we got our problems, but so does everybody else worse, Yes. And, there's a lot of financial infrastructure here and a lot of great places to invest. So, you don't really want to bet against America. You really don't want to do that.
Rick Rule, he called it, I had him on the show last week, and he called the U.S. dollar the prettiest mare in the slaughterhouse.
Okay,
all the other cows are uglier than us, so we'll be the last.
it's really true. You don't the dollar is everybody else is inflating too. Everybody else is doing easy money policy as well. I mean, and you look at, how much is a euro going to go up when it's got negative interest rates, negative nominal rates, for crying out loud? How much demand is there going to be? And it just shows, when you have negative rates, it shows you how broken the economy is. You may not like the dollar, but I bet you'd be happy if I sent you a bunch,
I like that. Okay. So where do we invest in a high inflation environment? So by the government's own admission, they say that it's being inflated away at 7.5%. I would argue that it's probably higher than that, but we could probably agree that's the minimum. Right? It could be more. I want to get your opinion on three topics, precious metals, gold and silver, and the stock market, and also real estate, probably cash flowing real estate. How do you feel about those in an inflationary environment that we're in
now? Yeah, well, gold is typically where people go for inflation. But if you look at the high inflation 80s, gold dropped during that decade. And it has not performed. So inflation, if you look over the last 40 years of inflation, 40 years, the last 40 years, the inflation went up about 3.3x, which means if you had something worth a dollar, it's now you would pay $3.30 for that over 40 years. Gold has gone up 3x. Since that time period. So it hasn't kept pace with inflation. So I love gold, you know, it's beautiful, you know, and it's a good hedge, but it's not been a great investment, and it's very difficult, cumbersome to own. It doesn't have any income. So, it's not a place you're going to get wealthy, investing. You know, it's, to me, gold is a hedge. Okay. If you look at the same period, the same 40-year period, if you'd have bought a dollar of, you know, or $1,000 of the S&P 500 40 years ago, it's now you would have made 83x, versus gold, which was 3x. So where would you, you know, what's a better hedge for inflation? And the reason the hedge of inflation, you're looking for companies, why the stock market does well is because companies raise prices too. So Apple iPhone, if we have 7% inflation, my guess is next year Apple phones are going to be going up. And if you've been shopping recently, you're noticing inflation. And if you actually are paying those higher prices, those are the companies you want that are going to do well. What the companies who can raise prices, or, you know, as economists call it, have pricing power, right? They can raise prices and people are going to pay it. So, you know, you may go to the Samsung Galaxy instead of the iPhone, but the prices are still going to go up, right? Yeah. You may not buy beef, you may buy pork, right? But yeah, prices are still going up.
Yeah. Okay. And what are your thoughts on cash flowing real estate, like commercial, multifamily, single family? Like, I'm thinking like a 3+2.
Right. And that's the secret weapon. That's when you get more than pricing power. Okay. So if you look at a simple multifamily chunk of real estate, all right, well, the rents do go up, and maybe they lag by a year, right? If it takes you a year to raise rates and raise rents and you realize that. So it's lagging inflation by air, which isn't that bad. You know, storage is another one that it lags even less. You can raise rents even faster. If you look at industrial real estate, it lags probably more, right? If there's more lag against inflation, that may not track inflation exactly. So all the real estate is different, but let's just pick multifamily. Does it track inflation? Absolutely. Absolutely. If you've ever rented, rents go up and so it tracks inflation, but here's where you win big time. The best way to get rich in an inflationary environment is to borrow money. Okay. So, you know, I actually have a friend. I was actually in the worst inflation in the world in 2007 was in Zimbabwe. Okay. And I can't remember what the rate was, but it was like 10,000% inflation or something just ungodly, right? I was actually in Zimbabwe in 2007 when I was helping an orphanage down there and, you know, whatever. And I literally, they were taking grocery bags full of money, cash money, to fill up the gas tank of the car. No kidding. And one pastor down there told his congregation, hey guys, go out and borrow as much money as you can and buy the biggest house you can possibly buy. He himself bought a $300,000 Mediterranean mansion, you know, 6,000 square feet, let's say. I'm just making this up, but okay. And he paid $300,000 for that. But literally 2 years later, he paid that off with a grocery bag full of money that was worth $10 and owned it free and clear. Are you with
That's
me?
That's an exaggerated example.
That's an exaggerated example. So what happens is if you have $100,000 sitting in the bank at 7% inflation, in 10 years, that $100,000 buys $50,000 worth of stuff. Yeah. So it drops by half. The value of that drops by half. And this is the big secret, you know, of why I don't fear the national debt. Okay. Inflation is a massive transfer of wealth from savers to borrowers. And who's the biggest borrower on the planet? Or one of the biggest?
The United States government.
So they want to get rid of the debt. That's a problem. Let's just inflate it away.
Yeah.
And at 7% inflation, that debt, literally the purchasing power of that debt drops by 50%, 50%. And meanwhile, their taxes are going up with inflation, aren't they? Are taxes indexed to inflation? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So they just pay it off. And by the way, America had a debt to GDP ratio over 100 before. And guess what happened? Nothing. They paid it down by exactly, and this is after World War II. They paid down just by having high, and it doesn't have to be hyperinflation, just moderate levels of inflation or moderate to high inflation like we're having now. So
I'm going to share a screen with one of the graphs that you sent me. You can see the inflation and housing prices here.
Yeah. So, and this is just residential housing. So you can see basically inflation in the blue, and you can see the value of housing, the increase in housing in the red. And you can see basically housing by itself has generally tracked and beat inflation for the last 50 years. Doesn't surprise anybody, really.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
So we're talking about debt and how debt decreases in value. Or it is deflated away or inflated away in value, and how the government benefits. But what if we can do that too? And we can. And the key is to be borrowers. So the best way to get rich is to borrow money at fixed interest rates. So let's say I can borrow money at 3% interest rate. Okay, but literally inflation is decreasing the value of that by 7.5%. So in essence, I'm being paid 4% to borrow money. And I just have to earn, you know, I just have to earn a little bit on that, and boom, you know. So that's where commercial real estate is the most incredible place to be. So I'm super bullish on storage. I'm bullish on multifamily. And, you know, and especially if you can borrow money at fixed interest rates, it's the way to get wealthy. Okay, so here's a little chart I created. Yeah, and you can see this is just commercial real estate value. And maybe if you're a commercial real estate investor, you're familiar with this value add strategy. You buy a piece of property, you improve it, you get your net operating income to go up, and the value of the property scales with net operating income. Well, in this case, you don't even have to, you can be an idiot and not even add value. You just raise your rents because of inflation.
Yeah.
And guess what? And so this place at 7% inflation, this place in 30 years is worth, you know, $75 million here, according to the chart, you know? And meanwhile, the debt, now in here, I just modeled a interest only debt, right? You put $7.5 million in debt on that. Well, that $7.5 million in debt stays the same if I'm only interest only, right? So the value of the property goes up, but the debt just stays the same. And in fact, the little dashed line there shows the actual value of that debt in inflated, you know, dollars. And so your debt is simply being eaten away. Meanwhile, that property continues to increase in price. So the key is getting an asset that increases with inflation's, you know, with inflation, and to buy it with debt that doesn't increase with inflation, you know, then you're
fixed,
you're making
rate debt,
straight
cash debt. Flowing real estate.
Yeah, it is time to back up the truck and get as much into debt as you possibly can, as long as you can put that money to work, and as long as you can service the debt. You have to make sure your income can stable enough to service that debt, and then let it be eaten away by inflation.
Yeah. Yeah. I did an episode recently on good debt versus bad debt. And sometimes when I tell people about this, not on the show, but they're like, well, so I should just max out my credit card then. And I'm like, no, that is not what I'm talking about.
That's not good debt.
No, that is not good debt.
No, but yeah, we're buying up, you know, multifamily as fast as we can, you know, find great properties, and we're getting debt, fixed rate debt for 5 years at 4%. You know, I'm doing that all day long.
Yeah.
You know, 4%. They're paying me 3%, 3.5% to borrow money. Go borrow money, and my interest is -3%. So that's real interest rates, right?
Yeah. Here's another one that I liked. Okay, inflation unequally benefits equity.
Right. Yeah, so the previous chart showed the value of the property and the value of the debt. And this shows the difference. So here's the property multiple, that same chart, but showing the multiple. So it went up over a 20-year period, 3.9x, right? So that property, you know, if you bought it at 10 million, it's up 3.9x the property. But if you look at the equity, because of, you know, because of the debt component, you're making 12.5x on the equity component. So
on what you had to put in,
because the equity, you are short dollars, right? So you're long an inflation protected property, and you're short dollars. And you're short cash basically. And that's exactly the position you want to be in this inflationary environment.
Okay. Okay. I like that a lot. Now you have a, Aspen Funds, you formed this 8 years ago, correct?
And yes.
You take, investments from, accredited investors. And so just quick highlight, accredited investor, single 200K or more for the past 2 years as income, married 300K, $1 million net worth, not counting your house, right? Or 5 mil in assets. So as long they've gotten accredited investor status, then the minimum buy-in is 50K. It's locked up for a year, and you've never missed a payment.
That's our income fund. It's fantastic. Yeah, even sailed through COVID. It's doing super well, and little rocket ship, you know.
Yeah, so basically you get a group of these guys together and you buy an apartment complex, is that correct?
Yeah, well, that's our income fund. So that's primarily reperforming notes. So we buy debt on real estate that owns around 2,000 real estate notes. And so some people collect rent payments from rental properties. We're actually the bank. We go upstream one level. So we're actually the bank. We collect mortgage payments and we buy these notes at a discount. And so it's not real estate, but we also have other funds that do real estate. And we're doing storage and real estate funds as well. So
is that your growth fund?
Yes, we have two new funds that are doing that.
Okay. And if people want to find out more information, they can go to aspenfunds.us.
That's it.
All right. And check out your YouTube channel, Invest Like a Billionaire. I like it. You and your son have a good dynamic, and you have really interesting interviews. The one you did recently with the real estate guy, I can't remember his name, was really good. But
yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for putting out a good product, and thank you for coming on the show, sir. This was fun.
My pleasure. Best to all you and your listeners.
Yes. All right. Take care and have a good rest of the day, sir.
All right. Thanks.